Blog Talk Radio.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Welcome. It's the NAA Community Conversations with Brother Booker. Today we're going to talk about finding one. Are you ready to discuss finding the one? Black economics, breaking down the house, inward, and much, much more. Sit tight, buckle up, coming to you live with Brother Booker in just a few minutes. Oh yeah. Welcome to Empowerment 365. It's 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment. Just for you, Shemaine Man, Marvin Rohn, coming to you live again for another episode of the Empowerment Show that you love. It's Community Conversations. Today we're going to talk about a few things, but first we have to learn about the NAAEA and its components. What is the NAAEA, you ask? It's the National African American Empowerment Association, and the mission of the association is to ensure that the needs of the African American community are met through the development of programs and services that educate, inspire, motivate, and empower you, the African American community, to do what? It's to become the best that we can be. How do we do that? We have to challenge ourselves. In what areas, you ask? Hey, Marv, what areas? It's politics. You have to have a political agenda. Hey, Marv, what about economics? Yes, that's right. You have to have an economic agenda, right? You have to have some resources coming in and flowing out and right back in. Again, you have to have a plan and a philosophy that works for your family and your community. What else? Athletics is health, wellness, fitness, and nutrition. You have to take care of your body and your mind. What is your mental health program? What is your physical health program that will sustain you so you can be here for the next generation, that you can educate, inspire, empower the next generation? Rather than them having to think about what you said, they can hear you while you're here. Culture is cultural programs, relevant cultural programs that educate our young people and our families on our strength. Culture is just like lanes in a highway. They just keep you right in line. So you want to do that. You want to be able to have strong cultural programs. And we're coming up on Kwanzaa, and those seven principles are so very valuable to that. And then the education. So comprehensive education, allowing us to be the best that we can be mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually, and culturally. That's right. I said it. That's right. It's the NAAEA. And on each Saturday at 2 p.m., we have an Empowerment Saturday. You won't want to miss it. We have great shows. Go back in the archives and look us up. We're doing it, right? And we want to be able to inspire you to take those next steps. Today, we're coming to you live with Community Conversations with my good friend, Brother Booker. Brother Booker, are you there?
Yes, sir. Brother, assalamu alaikum.
All right. Wa alaikum assalam, my brother. How are you?
Good. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well today. So we got you. You in the seat. Buckle up. We got our listeners, and I know they love listening to you. So today we're going to have a community conversation. It's going to be wide open, and I want to start with the opening statement from you as the listener who, if they're listening every Saturday, know that when you come in, you're going to come in strong. So let's start with an opening statement, and then we'll get right into the show.
All right, my brother. My opening statement tonight is something that I thought about today, and the statement is, we must understand that God, whatever we call God, Allah, Buddha, Jehovah, Yahweh, whatever, et cetera, God didn't tell us about our slave master. Our slave master told us about God.
Hmm. Unpack that, brother.
We must understand that God did not tell us about our slave master. Our slave master told us about God. And in my research and looking back now, granted, let me say up front, 90% of the things I'm going to say that I have said, I learned from white people, from studying his story, if you will, from studying his books, learning his system, because I speak his language like all of us. Okay? So I must understand his word. So in my research and looking at, when I want to know what the word slave mean, I got to go to white folks and look it up on Wikipedia or Webster or whatever to define for me what slave means, okay? For example, now in doing that, like I've said before, I've learned that slavery started at least 11,000 years ago, at least that. It said it predates written history. You know, it predates that, but they at least 11,000 years ago. And they talk about the importance of slavery to the system in which we live and for the last 11,000 years. So in other words, the system needs slaves. It says when the slavery first started back on whenever in those days, it was two group of people meeting. And one group they call, as I said before, they call the hunter-gatherers. And the other group was known as the agriculturists. You know, now the agriculturists, when they met the hunter-gatherers, they just ate vegetation. They lived spread out all over the place. You know, they were very peaceful. You know, they hunted wildlife, nothing, you know. And that system worked, and it was the dominant system on the planet. They say 90% of the economies, quote unquote, were hunter-gatherers until the agriculturalists came along, okay. And that pictures and the artwork they have from, you know, that they drew the pictures of the images that I guess been passed down of the hunter-gatherers were black people.
All right.
So one can only assume that the agricultural people that came in with this different economic system were white folk. And it says that the agriculturalists came in, their system, because they had dense populations, you know, a lot of people and so forth all over the place, needed that labor, that slavery. And that system is built on slavery. So you got to have slavery to have the system that's opposite of the hunter-gatherer. You know, it cannot function like the hunter-gatherer system because that's a shared system, working together, doing things together, cultivating the land, living off the vegetation and so forth. They, as we call it, made an economy out of it, the agriculturalists, creating slavery. And therefore, like I said, let's think about it. If this thing been enslaved, the world has been enslaved for over 11,000 years, that means we've never been free. Nor are we free now. And in this process, everything we know, everything we've taught, been taught and learned, we learned from the master, the enslaver, we've learned, including everything we know about God. Like I said, master taught us about God. God didn't teach us about master. That's my opening statement. We must understand that. You know, the master taught us about God. God did not teach us about master. And in master's teaching to us about God, he eventually made himself God in doing so and telling us that we are not God, nor can we be God. He teaches us that we cannot be God because the one thing he knows for sure is that he is not God. So therefore, he cannot let us know that there's any godness or greatness in us in order to enslave us, in order to keep us enslaved. You see, he must maintain that teaching, that control. And it took 100-something years to get us to the point recently where so-called black Americans, African Americans, whatever, to get us to the point where we could take the chains off and let us walk around free, so-called free, because the mind had been enslaved. And that's what has been going on in this world for over 11,000 years. How do we know that this is it? Like this planet, how do we know that this, how do we know about what's up in the sky? White folks, how do we know it's called a universe? How do we know what galaxies are? Milky Ways, other than the candy bar. How do we know all these things we know or think we know or think our limitations are come from what we've been taught by white folks, by our master? And that's not, let me say right here, those statements have nothing to do with hatred of another group of people on my part or racism. It's the truth.
Okay.
So that's what we have to understand. It's the truth. We cannot lie to ourselves and say that everything we know we have not been taught from white folks. Yes, we have. And we have to admit that. We have to acknowledge that.
Let me ask this question, though. We know that there is a history prior to the European having control of the earth, so to speak. So we know astronomy, we know agriculture, we know mathematics and sciences come from people of color throughout ancient history. So they don't have control of that knowledge, so to speak. They manage that knowledge because they are not the originators of it. So I just want to be clear that they aren't the founders of mathematics and sciences and agriculture and astronomy and mathematics. They aren't.
No.
They have
abducted
it.
But they control it.
I just
want
to be clear about that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. They
right.
They control it. In other words, they control the truth. Whether
mm-hmm.
it's the truth about God, whether it's the truth about science, mathematics, what have you, they control that truth. And I guess if you look biblically, the Bible says the one thing the devil will do is deceive the world. So that means he's going to
mm-hmm.
lie. I mean, he got to lie and spread deception and deceit. Yeah, he knows the truth. Therefore, that's his power, the truth.
Mm.
Our ignorance of it keeps us from gaining our power and our greatness. But in saying that, I guess most people that go to church would agree that the devil, whoever that is, whatever, however you visualize that, but I don't, it's not a person that's under the ground in a red outfit and a pitchfork and so forth, not in my opinion. Okay, but
you got that right.
The devil controls the world, and most religious people will agree to that, that this is Satan's world. This is the devil's world. Okay, well, then let's look at that statement. If we agree with that statement, then I would ask myself then, logically, if we are people of God, supposed to be, and righteous people of God, you would then have to ask the question, okay, if I accept that premise that the devil rules this world that we live in, what is the first thing he would have to take control of in order to rule the world? The number one thing he would have to take control over to rule the world is religion.
Mm.
Because if he doesn't control religion, and we all religious, God-fearing, God-knowledgeable, God-righteous, in the people,
mm-hmm.
great God people, he could not rule the world. Because we, the people of God, would not stand for it and allow it. He would have no control at all over us, not us.
True.
So the first thing he must take control of, is religion for the whole thing to work. That's why it's back to my opening statement. Master taught us about God. God did not teach us about Master. Therefore, in essence, we really don't know God.
Mm.
Because we
all
don't
right,
know
well,
ourselves.
Let me get into the topic then. So today's theme is how do we find the one? And first of all, I want you to if you will, define what that one is in your term, and then we'll continue to break that down. You're listening to NAAEA Conversations with Brother Booker. Brother Booker, how do you become the one?
Well, I look at the what I see are the, some characteristics of the one, okay? And the quick synopsis of the one is the one finds God in himself, him or herself.
Mm-hmm.
That's the beginning. You have to find that greatness, that God in you. We all have to do that. And the characteristics of the one, some of them. The one is honest with himself and herself.
Mm.
You have to be honest with yourself.
Okay.
You know,
if
you know something is not right, you've got to be honest with yourself and accept it and say that's not, I know I'm wrong, I know I'm right, I got to be honest with myself. When somebody is giving you something that you can see and prove is true, you have to be honest with yourself and admit it and go with it. And a lot of times we won't do that. We tend to make excuses, no, I can't be that way. Now, yeah, what you say, brother, makes sense. But what you say logically, it's no but. We've got to be honest with ourselves. The one also loves him or herself. And we talk about this all the time. You have to love yourself. You know, you can't let others define you, making you hate yourself, going against yourself, denying yourself, belittling yourself, that you're not this, you're not that, you can't be that, you're not God, you can't be God, you're great. No, the one, you've got to love yourself. And
once you love
yourself, then you can love others like you, because when you see them, you see yourself. That's where you start. And the next thing, our next characteristic is the one loves his people. Through self-love, you then love your people. Because when you look at the word self, and I looked this up one time in a dictionary as well, the word self.
Okay.
And one of the definitions of the word self is people of the same color.
Mm-hmm.
So when you say, I'm selfish, well, it's just like when people say, are you a racist? Well, how do you define racist? If you define a racist as one who loves himself, loves his or her people, then I'm a racist. But if you define racist as one who will hinder and impede and destroy a race of people for the betterment of his own, then I'm not a racist. But if you say to me a racist is one who loves himself and his people, I'm a racist. Okay? That leads to the next characteristic. One believes in himself. You have to believe in yourself. That's key to knowing yourself. You know you believe in yourself. Know who you are, your greatness, and your love, your characteristics, your nature, how you are as a person. It's just your nature to do the right thing, your nature to stand up for what's right. You know, accept that you know those things are in you. You do right not because you're told or forced to. It's your nature. It's that God in you that make you do right. And the one believes in his people, even if they don't believe in themselves. This one was definitely hard for me when my eyes first began to open.
Mm-hmm.
Because as my eyes opened to what I discovered was the truth, I wanted all my people's eyes to open to that truth and for them to see it like I could see it.
Ain't nothing wrong with that.
But that didn't happen. You know what I mean? You know, all the things that I was running around preaching, self-love, do for self, do for kind, love your brother, take care of your woman, take care of your children, you know, actually, you know, educate each other, move back to the hood. We need to, you know, to most of us, I'm just saying it like, this nigga out of his mind. You know, I don't hate myself. Yes, you do. If you're doing the things you do, that's self-hatred. And then I became the one that was crazy. You know, I became the one, man, he got some good ideas, but that's a crazy nigga there, boy. You know, I love him a lot, and, you know, that's my boy, but you got to watch him, man. And, you know, it became that kind of thing to where became the oddball, even in my own household, in my own family. You know, I became the kind of like, not the outcast, because my family never turned their back on me. They just said, that's my son, that's my brother, that's my uncle, that's my dad. And, you know, but y'all just got to understand it. But it's that it became the outcast, you know. Everybody, like, and sometimes my wife would even say, okay, don't get started. What I do deserve a sermon, you know. And you have to, as the one, you have to understand that you're going to get that and you have to be willing to accept that, that it's just you standing
right
up here. You know, it's just you that others don't get it right now. But because they don't get it, don't mean that you got to turn on them and not get it yourself and not stick with
true
it yourself, you know. And I said that the one always stand for what he knows is right, even if he has to stand alone. You got to. You, even if you have to stand alone. If you know it's right, despite everything else, I don't care how many other people saying it's wrong, if you know it's right, you've got to stand for it if you stand by yourself. I guess you can equate that back to the Bible, like Jesus. He stood alone. You know, he stood alone. Even his disciples turned on it. Wouldn't be. Jesus asked him in one scripture to watch out while he went and pray on the mountaintop. He come back, they sleeping. Like, whoa, man. Oh, you know. And the minute that he came on him, asking, are you, I don't know, Jesus. I don't know what, oh, man, oh, you know. Everybody had to stand alone. Not that you want to, but I'm standing for what is right. And if you stand for what is right, you know it's right, you got to do it even if it stands alone. And that means the one loves for his brother what he loves for himself. What I love for me, I love for you. We all in this together. Characteristics of the one. The one is a great communicator. Therefore, he knows how to listen. You can't communicate if you can't listen. It's not about always coming out your mouth. You know, I tell people all the time, normally you don't learn anything when you're talking. You know, normally you do not learn anything when you are talking. You know, because you should know what you're talking about, right? When it comes
that's
out
right
of your mouth. You know, so you have to be a great listener, communicator, to be an effective communicator, to dialogue with people, understand where they are, their issues, their, you know, I ain't saying you got to agree on everything.
Right.
Because we agree to disagree, but not be disagreeable.
True.
But we understand. I'm listening to you. You know, you might not know how much I understand your situation, your pain, and sometimes I might not understand your situation, but that's why we're talking. That's why we're communicating, and we can share experiences that we get to know each other. The one is not afraid to die for what is right. The one is not afraid to die for what is right. If you... freedom not free. I say that again.
Go ahead.
Freedom
brother
is not free.
Mm-hmm.
You have to fight for freedom and be willing to die for freedom. That's how you got niggas, because niggas are afraid to die. Okay? The original slaves took death. You know, people like to say, oh, we survived. We're great survivors and so forth. No, the original slaves. I'm not going to disrespect the brothers and sisters who threw
don't
their
do
babies
don't
off
do it
them ships, you know, throwing their babies off them ships in the Middle Passages instead of letting them come to America and be slaves. I'm not going to disrespect those brothers and sisters that jumped over and committed suicide, those brothers and sisters that went down fighting, that died other than to be a slave. I'm not going to disrespect them and say we are survivors. Because we've made it through this far. No. The reality of it is, we sold out. We were scared. We were scared to die. We were scared to smile. So we like in the neighborhood, they say, we chumped down. Not only did we chump down, we chumped our children down.
That's a hard pill to swallow,
a
brother.
Hard pill to swallow for some of our people.
Who have learned to adapt so that we can exist. And to say that, some people would be offended.
I understand, but we got to look at the bigger picture. If this system, we keep the system going in our so-called efforts to, quote-unquote, to survive, because the system survives off of us being in the mindset that we are in. Kill the system, kill the slave. kill his slave, kill his system. Kill that slave mentality, you kill the system. Because
so
you
talked
won't go
about
along with it.
Before, killing a mindset. Can you describe what that is in a little detail for us while we're talking about this mindset here?
One, you got to be willing to admit, like I said, be honest with yourself. We got to be honest with ourselves and admit everything we've been taught in this system is probably not true. And we got to be willing to analyze that and study that within ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
See, we can't keep looking for the truth or the greatness from outside of us. That's another part of being in one. We've got to look inside of us and be honest with ourselves and admit to ourselves, this is where we are, and this is how we got here. And until we can admit and accept those things, as you say, it's a hard pill to swallow, we cannot go forward. We cannot become free, if you will. We're still going to be dangling on and hanging on and keeping this thing going, hoping and praying and begging that one day it's going to change. It's not going to change for us unless we change it for ourselves. And I'm not talking about changing the system. I'm talking about change us and get out of the system mentality.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to make the system survive. We should be trying to free ourselves, free our minds. I guess the one would rather serve in heaven than to rule in hell.
Mm.
See, and that's the opposite from the devil. You know, the devil said he'd rather rule in hell, excuse me, than to serve in heaven. The opposite for us. We should want to serve in heaven rather than try to rule a piece of hell.
Unpack that for me, brother, for our listeners.
When we have that self-hatred, denial of love of self, disrespect of each other, hate our brothers. Well, if you hate yourself, you're going to hate your brothers and sisters. That's nowhere.
True.
You can't love anybody else if you don't love yourself.
That's so true.
So when we run around hating ourselves, that's how we kill each other, peddle dope to each other, pimp our women, do the things we do disrespectful, all this the child molestation, all that. That's self-hatred. So long as we're in that mindset, okay, we are feeding this hell in which we're living in. We are becoming servants of hell.
Mm.
You know, we are the servants, and we're doing what hell wants us to do. We need to get the hell out of us,
mm.
if you will. See, that's before we can go forward. If the stairways to heaven could be climbed, as the old song goes,
mm-hmm.
they wouldn't want us climbing the stairways to come to heaven in the mindset that we are today. They would shut the door.
How do we get out?
Clear the mind. Get that. Start with that love of self. Try to discover that God in you. Be the one. Be honest with yourself. We have to be, because until we accept these things, then we don't know what we need to do to make change to that. To change
right.
it and get ourselves to move forward. I mean, like I said before, white folks, when they have a problem, they identify the cause of the problem before they come up with solutions. We just the opposite. We talk about the problem, and then we try to come up with solutions. We don't want to address the cause of the problem. And until you identify the cause of the problem, you cannot come up with a solution to that problem, because you've got to address the cause. You know, as I said, plane crash, they go looking for them boxes, man.
Right.
Like boxes. They don't try to do nothing on that crash, on that plane, until they come up with them boxes and find out what happened, what caused this thing to crash. Now, once we know that, we go back. We can go. We. If it's true, like I said, I'm learning most of this stuff from white folk, that slavery been going on for 11,000 years, then we really have to try to go back as much as we can. As you talked about us being archaeologists and so forth, historians, and all, we need to go back and find out as much as we can. How did it even start? You know, how could people enslave people? How could this new people? Now, I got some ideas. They kind of tricked us into it and so forth. But what methods was used and how with the procedure and how did this all come about and try to see what happened to us? Then when we can kind of agree, like, okay, this is happening, happened, it's still happening, this was going on, then we can come up with, okay, how do we get out of this? Once we can agree on that, how do we get out of this? You know, when we can agree that our minds have been destroyed, that what we know we don't know, you know, and all of the answers at that point to me, brother, because like in this world we live in right now, who trusts anybody in our days? You know, who trusts anybody? You don't trust the president. You know you can't trust the president. You can't trust Congress. You can't trust the Senate, the congressmen, the presidents, the CEOs, people that make movies. I mean, you know, people already talking about we don't know if we're going to take the vaccine or not because of what white folks have done to us in the past with the tests and all that. We can't take this. They're trying to kill us. It's hard to trust anybody. And bring it home to the home in the neighborhood and all that. Who we trust in the neighborhood, in the hood? You know, because as you mentioned earlier, that competitiveness, when we accept this hell that we in the competitiveness, we start competing against each other for the little table scraps and the crumbs on the table in hell. What kind of economic situation I can improve, you know, then if I got to stab that nigga in the back or stop on her toe or do what I got to do, then I'm going to do it because I'm going to get mine. That's the mindset we have. I want the big house on the hill. I'm tired of living around all these niggas. Damn that man be don't. Brother, I was in the Navy with years ago. Came a big, and we were tight, all of us were. Went to Vietnam together, and we got back. He hooked up with a white boy, and he hooked up with a brother that was a big time brother in San Diego, and got him hooked up with the white mafia. And I mean, he was big. Because the brother that he hooked up with, the brother owned the radio store. There was one black radio station in San Diego. This brother owned that. He owned all the liquor stores in the black community, all the record shops in the black community. He was the pimping, and he was running more dope than a little bit, okay? So my partner hooks up with him, gets into that clique. He gets out of the Navy, and I mean, he wheeling and dealing. He got women all over San Diego, white and black, selling his reefer. You know, his deal with them was he give him $100 worth, they give him $50 back. And I meet him all over the place, you know. And that's how he was running it, you know. And I was talking to him about it one day, man, you know, how you do this, man? And he said, man, book, if I don't do it, somebody else will. If I don't take advantage of these niggas, somebody else will. Why should I not get this money? You know, that was his logic. And that's unfortunately where we are as a people. I'm gonna get mine. If I gotta step on you, do whatever I gotta do to you, nigga, you need to get out of my face. I'm gonna get what? My piece of the pie, my piece of hell, my piece of this economy, my piece of what? You've been suckered. We've been used and abused, and then they use you to show the rest of us. Look, he got up here. This nigga make $250,000 a year. Last year, he got a $200,000 bonus. Look at it. This nigga make movies, man. He cut records.
That's you're all part of the system. You're listening to NAA EA Community Conversations with Brother Booker. We're talking about finding the one and how do we find the one. And Brother Booker is sharing with us the qualities of being the one. And so, speaking of, as we transition now to black economics, what do you feel is the centerpiece? Because you brought that in terms of the selfishness and using drugs as a platform for economic gain. What's the black economic plan or agenda?
At this point, in my opinion, we still got to tap into some of the white folks' knowledge of the past, but try to make it for a good cause as much as you can and take the good out of it for when you see it. And I mean, white folks in marketing over the years evolved into making products because they identified through research a need.
Mm-hmm.
They talk to the customers, potential customers, and so forth, and ask them what they need, what they want, and what they, and try to identify things that folk needed, and then go back and produce that product, and then tell them where they can go get it from. Okay, we need to, I think, collectively, if we really want to try to do an economic base in our community, get to know our folks and what's truly mm-hmm. really needed in the neighborhood. You know, I hate to use the word invest in our community, because invest to me kind of say like I'm trying to make some money off my people down there, so I'm going to invest down there. It's, you know, not we need to, I like to call it, put life in our community and eliminate the death in our community. Let's see what's going on with our people, what's needed in the community. For example, let's try to put black-owned grocery stores in the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
You know, several all over. Let's put daycare centers in, and not just daycare centers. It was one in Washington, D.C. years ago that my ex-wife and I put her son in when he was 2 years old, called the Academic Enrichment Center.
Mm.
And, brother, what they did with those young children was nothing short of amazing. But what they did was they started early on nurturing them and bringing the greatness in them out of them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? That's so if we talk about education, about people, get a foundation in there with some young folk, invest that money. I hate to use that word again, but put the money in our neighborhoods and maybe do academic enrichment centers. Bring our children there every day, you know, at least 5 days
a week. I like that.
Start developing them and nurturing them and preparing them for this world in which we live in, and try to not instill, but nurture and pull out the greatness that's in them. Now, the key is, one of the keys to doing that with our young folks, they got to see these things in us.
Hmm.
See, the greatness that we're going to be trying to tell them that's in them, and trying to nurture them and pull out of them and prepping them for a world that's going to be a heaven for them when they become men and women. We've got to show them those things in us. We can't be telling them all these great things, you know, and then they see us sneaking out the back of a neighbor's house with another woman. We can't be up there preaching to them on Sundays and Saturdays and Fridays, and they see us around the corner snorting crack or smoking dope or even drinking liquor or doing whatever. We can't make excuses and say, well, we all have weaknesses, and I struggle. And that you're giving them a way out then, right there.
Right.
Said, well, hell, if Pop can't do it, Mom can't. Yeah, I'm like, I'm going to try to, Dad. But I think I'm going to try a little bit of this over here, too.
Right.
You know, because if truth be told, we run around, most of us, 95% of us, if not higher, run around as teenagers and young adults. We raise hell. Most young folk ain't up in church. Most of the folk up in church, old folk, man. And then we don't go to church until later on in years when we're getting ready to die. Because we think we're getting ready to die and we're going to try to get to heaven. So now we'll go to church and say we're getting saved. You know, but
that.
The young lives, we go crazy. We running, man. We run wild. We going buck crazy. I did it too. I ain't going to lie. I did it too. Searching for yourself. But if your parents know in the beginning, and we there cultivating and nurturing our communities, our children, they ain't going to be out there lost like that, you know, out there searching for what they know they're looking for. But they got to see it in us. So we going to come to the community bringing these things out there. Show it. Not just teach, but show it. I guess you want to call it nonverbal communications, you know, which is a powerful thing. That nonverbal communication just as strong as verbal communication. You know, I can get people looks.
You know, back in the day, people used to say, "Do as I say, not as I do."
That's the problem. I say, not as I do. Then we start saying, "Oh no, that's hypocritical." I ain't doing that. Like I said, I ain't doing that. I see y'all out there doing. Who you gonna tell me how to do this? And you doing this, this, this. Once they get you on that, they got you.
Right.
You say, yes, sounds good, but you ain't doing it.
That's right.
How come you not doing it? You said they're telling me how to do it. No, man. Yeah, I see you going to church every Sunday, but I also saw you in the bootlegger joint the other night, too.
Right. And I think that's how our young people lost faith in us, that we've lost faith because they've seen us be hypocritical so much.
Exactly.
All right. So, again, you're listening to NAAEA Community Conversations with Brother Booker. He's laying it down. I need you to take this show, dissect it, break down. Look at the points that he's making. He's making some great points, right? You got to dissect it for what it is. His great opening statement about realizing who God is, right? And then moving on down to what those qualities of the one is. And then he spoke to us a bit on black economics, right? I like the academic enrichment centers and particularly those portions of being the one, right? Being honest with yourself and love yourself and you're kind and you love his people. All of those things are very important. Now, as we transition into the next phase of our conversation, let's talk about this word because you use it on the show a lot and you used it today. And again, our people have taken the word and made it into a good word. Positive word in some way, my nigga, my nigger, my nigga. Mm. But white people can't use it because we know what that is. So let's talk about the N word or the nigger word, the house nigga. And we're going to break down this N word and we're breaking down house niggas because we talk about it a lot on the show. So now the listeners get a chance to hear from you without interruption. It's on you, brother. Break it down.
Well, first thing, when you use the word nigga, or when I use the word nigga, or anyone use the word nigga, it should not have any effect on you at all.
I like that.
Unless
I like that.
You know what I'm saying? It's like I used to tell the students at Armstrong. I said, look, there's nothing they get to fight in their life. Look, what happened? Well, he said he called me. He should not be able to say anything out his mouth to hurt you unless you allow it to. Nothing. I don't care what he say out of his mouth. It cannot hurt you unless you allow it to. And I refuse to give anyone that kind of power over me to where they can say something and I just go to hell off and start acting a fool. And what? You going to say something to get? That's training. That's like a dog. Jump, dog, and the dog jump. Roll over. Come here, Rover. Flip. Give me your paw. You know? All you got to say to us is, nigga. Oh, Lord. And we all that mother call me a nigga, man. What? You know, if we walking down the street and a white man yell, nigga, don't turn and look. You know, when you turn and look and you acknowledging whatever he is, and then what does the word mean? You know, how do we define it? Over the years, it has changed so many times. You know, like Negro and all that, you know. At first, I remember years ago, the word was a lazy person. A nigga was a lazy person, lazy, trifling person. Then it became a Negro. So we told you a nigga was a lazy, trifling person. Then the next definition became a Negro. So that association become a nigga is a lazy, trifling person. You know, a nigga does all, and then it was ingrained into us on the plantation, obviously. Master say, I'm going to call you a nigga. I'm not going to call you a man. I'm going to call you a nigga or a boy.
Mm.
Okay? Come here, nigga. Like I said about the dog. Jump, nigga. Flip, nigga. Give me a paw. Roll over, nigga. It's a command word. It became so hateful to us on the plantation that niggas had to cool the word down to make it acceptable among ourselves because everybody calling everybody a nigga. But let's make it so we call each other a nigga. It ain't no big thing. We just going to get mad when a white man call us a nigga. Don't get mad when we call you a nigga. If you're not a nigga, don't let that be. That's my frame of mind. What's a nigga? I ain't one. Unless you're telling me the word nigga means a loyal, lovable, righteous, honorable nature black man, then yeah, I'm a nigga if that's what the word means. But if you put another definition to it, then that ain't me. So why am I gonna worry about it? Okay. And then I defined it a couple weeks ago as a well-trained slave. That's what a nigga is, a well-trained slave. Because that's what the master did on the plantation. called come in, nigga, down. Come in, nigga. Roll over, nigga. Run, nigga. Jump, nigga. Fetch, nigga. Get this, nigga. Do this, nigga. Come on, nigga. And you had to respond because you are my nigga. You my well-trained slave. And the house niggas were the really good ones. I can really trust you. You gonna come in the house. I'm gonna let you sleep in the house. This is a privilege, which also became a divisive point among our people. Obviously, you divide the house niggas from the field nigga. Field nigga back in the days were black folk were really on the original plantation. I would give credit and say a field nigga was a black man or woman who the white man had chained up working in the fields. They were chained because if they could get them chains off, they were going to kill our master. They were not going to take it. That's why they were wearing the chains. So when you got your behavior in check and nigga didn't bother you anymore and I ain't had to worry about you killing me anymore or doing no that, then I'm going to take the chains off and now I'm going to put some of y'all in the house. Then I know how you're going to act. Not only am I going to put you in the house, I'm going to let you cook for me. I'm going to let your woman breastfeed my children. My babies going to breastfeed from your, for all the bad things we done said about y'all niggas. How y'all filthy, lazy, stinky, whatever, all in all, just coon. I'm going to let my baby milk off of your woman. Think about that. You know, that was all part of the training. And over the years, the competition increased among niggas to get a house, to become a house nigga, knowing that house nigga. Now, what we must understand, too, though, is during this process, we had babies taken from their mamas.
True.
Okay? Some of them had black fathers, the bucks on the plantation. Some of them had white fathers, the masters, mating with the black women. His what they call them, nannies and, you know, picking nannies. And you know, so, and they had children, and those children were taken from mama and daddy. And raised in the house by master and his other niggas in the house, house niggas in the house, raising them. So them children coming up with no knowledge of their self, no knowledge of daddy, no knowledge of mama, no knowledge of their past, no all they learning is what they're seeing and being taught on the plantation by master. They learning about Christmas, they learn about Thanksgiving, they learn about Easter, they learning about black and white as defined by white folk, they learning about field niggas, house niggas as defined by master. So they don't know. Then they go to school. When they start allowing them to go to school, and then these Negroes produce children, grow up and produce children, grow up and produce. And the further you get away from the original people that rode over here on that boat, or 11,000 years ago, then you see what you got in us. We have no connection to back in the day, 400 years ago, or what was going on, or 11,000 years ago. This just didn't start 400 years ago. According to the white man, 11,000 years ago, if not longer. And so you got this process of just reproducing more slaves and slaves and slaves, building up this economy, this agricultural system for thousands of years. Getting lighter and lighter and skin complexion, that because of the mixing and the math. You know, it's just, oh my God. Dividing, competition, hating one another. Then you get to Willie Lynch, the light against the dark, the young against the old, the man against the woman. You know, we need to understand these things over our history and what has happened. Look at so-called civil rights movement. I ain't going to talk about what we marched for during the civil rights movement, but right on it, when we so-called were unified, where we were standing up. Now, the members of the people in the civil rights movement, they weren't dying as a whole for freedom. Couple got killed, Martin and a few. No, they weren't dying for freedom. They were dying for acceptance by master.
That's true.
Okay, that's what the fight really was for. But white men thought in that time. I think they say we shocked them in a way when we went to the street marching in the 60s. They didn't think we could gather that many black folks together behind an idea. So they had to divide that. So what happened on the tail end of the civil rights movement? The women's movement. And with the women's movement, black women then hooked up with white women And they both started talking about how bad their man was treating them.
Mm.
And we got to have the women's right movement, the glass ceiling and so forth. And that divided the black woman from the black man. Then on the heels of the women's movement came the gay rights movement.
Mm.
You can come on out the closet now. And so it diluted the so-called movements of the black community. You know? Because the original black movement was, well, you know, Marcus Garvey, it was not, let's lead this thing, man.
That's true.
Go back. Let's go back. We ain't talking about moving and integrating into the system. We're going to get the hell up out of here. Then I had a white man tell me this. He said, every movement that y'all had, white folks took control of it.
Mm.
The Jews took control of it. And they right up in the front, hand in hand, marching. Because now we got control of it because the objective changed. The objective or the goal of the movement became acceptance and better treatment in this system. We're not asking for a lot. We just want that. Instead of saying no. You know, like I said, 1863, January the 1st, 1863,
mm-hmm.
Proclamation of Emancipation. If we were truly free when that day came and they said to us, okay, niggas, y'all can go. As I said before, if we were truly free, we would have got on the nearest boat and left this jank. And if there wasn't no boat, we would have built ones ourselves and said, we're gone. Thank y'all. We understand what just happened for over 300 years. Okay? We forgiving people. My bad. We give y'all that. But we getting the hell up out of here. If we were truly free, on January the 1st, 1863, brother, that would have happened. There's no way in hell that we were free black men and women on that day would we have stayed here begging for acceptance after they had done all they had done to us for over 300 years. No way. No way. And you say, how can I make that statement? Because I'm a man. And that's not anything, I'm not saying anything about our women. I'm just saying as a man.
Mm-hmm.
As a man, thinking logically and truly understanding what freedom is, if I had been there on that day, ain't no man would have said, boss, can I stay? You would have said, sir, you got a boat, you can sell us, or anything, and you can, in some kind of way, you're going to make up for what you did. Just give us some ships and let us go back home. That's all we ask for you right now. That's what men would have done. Free men would have done.
Let me ask you
free men in that right of mind.
You talked about killing the mindset, and you mentioned the conditioning of what we call house niggers by the system that creates or perpetuates this same mindset or mentality that you see today. How can those who are conditioned become the one or work toward becoming the one?
First thing I said, you got to be honest with yourself and realize what you're seeing around you is the truth. What is happening to you? I mean, we live in this world every day. We see life. We know our roles. So we got to be honest with ourselves and admit our role. As men, excuse me, as young men, I would dare say we all go through it. You know, you had this culture shock. You raised, like myself and you, I was raised in the hood. I was raised in the projects. You know, I can remember days I sat on the sink looking in the mirror in the bathroom in Gibbon Court wondering what it would be like to be a white man. Okay? I had those thoughts. Because everything I saw going on around me was anti-black. I was being taught that, you know. So it was like what the other side looks like. At the same time, we were becoming divided in our neighborhood. At one time, we were together, but then we started fighting each other. At the latter part, before I left, Gibbon Court, we battling mm-hmm. each other. And then you get to the point where we all have what I call a rude awakening. I had mine when I got in the Navy. I didn't have one when I was at Channel 8, although I became the first black to work in television production in Richmond, if not the state of Virginia, when I started working at Channel 8, I didn't get the rude awakening just yet. What happened then was I was falling in love with the situation. I thought I was a nigga on the rise, showing up. You know, I'm working at a TV station. I'm a camera operator at the TV station. I know the Bowman body. I'm taping Shock Theater. You know, then I went to audio technician. Then I went to technical director. I'm putting the shows on. And then, you know, going to lunch with white folk and hanging out. You know, it's just, oh, man, you know. My step away from Gilpin Court. I'm like, oh, man, look at me now. People, you know, neighbors are talking about, I'm not working at Channel 8 and I'm doing this. Then when I got in the Navy and continued on that path of journalism, which I had no idea what I was doing when I was at Channel 8. I didn't realize I was in journalism, just was broadcast journalism. I ended up in, you know, in the Navy in journalism, broadcast journalism, eventually print journalism, becoming the first black editor of the largest newspaper in the Navy. And then I'm like, oh, man, I'm really out there, you know, hanging in San Diego, chasing, you know, hanging out with all kinds of women. I'll just leave it at that, okay? I'm just the party life. I'm just doing it and everything. And then starting to see how folk were angry with me and hating me because of who I was, the color of my skin. And I'm doing everything to let them know, look, no, I'm not. And in that time, it was deep in the Navy. I mean, it was deep in it. They had riots on it. I was on a ship that had riots on it. I was on two ships that had riots, to be honest. And, you know, and starting to see all this going on because of the color of my skin. These people are hating me and treating me like this. I ain't done nothing. And the jobs that we were allocated back in those days in the Navy, certain jobs you couldn't have. But then I was fortunate, I guess you want to call it, and had a job that I wasn't supposed to have, which brought more anger and animosity towards me from both sides, but mostly from white folk. You know, but there I was, and that awakening and the thing that I guess helped me through that part, I will be honest, is my upbringing in the hood. You know, because being raised in the hood back in those days, the one thing I knew for sure, I was black.
Okay.
And I was proud of it. I was proud of that fact. I heard James in 1966 say it loud, I'm black and I'm proud. You know, and I stood up for that. I had a little bit of the one in me at that time and didn't realize it, as they say.
Okay.
I stood up when I was pushed, when I was telling. I said, no, I'm standing up for what I know, for what is right. And if y'all telling me I can't stand up for what is right, then y'all gonna have, I'm pushing back. And I sent letters and I did all those things, you know, and you get that pressure on you, you know, because they don't have to kill you physically. They can kill you economically. It becomes hard for you to get a job.
True.
You know, you lose your job. Well, you can't get accepted anywhere. And those type of things are putting that pressure on you to where you, you know, how you going to handle this. And we all go through that as a man. And that's when you have to determine, I like to say, what kind of nigga are you going to be?
Well, brother, you know? We got about 2 minutes left in the show. And
yes,
I'm going to let you close it out the way you want to close it out. But we got to wrap this one up. I would like to say, what advice do you have for our listeners? Again, we're working on black or African-American empowerment. This is your last hoorah. Go ahead, brother.
Love yourself and believe in yourself. And look internal to you for that God in you. Because that God, that greatness, that righteousness, that Superman, if you will, Superwoman in you is right there. It's been buried for over who knows how long, but it's there. It's enslaved, y'all. I'm telling you, God is in you, and we've got to dig deep and find that God in you. And if you find that God in you, you will find me. Because we wanted the same.
All right. Thank you, brother. I'd like to thank you,
yes,
Brother
sir.
Booker, for your insightfulness. And again, the brother is challenging us to look at ourselves. So I'd like, again, to say thank you. I'm definitely ask you back for
yes,
more conversation, one-on-one with Brother Booker. And again, thank you so much. We're listening
you,
to NAEA Conversations with Brother Booker. Go back and listen to it. Go into the archive, listen to this one, share it with your family and friends. Check us out every Saturday at 2 p.m. for Empowerment Saturday. Brother Booker will be on there. He always has some great to talk about. And also our conversations are for us, by us, and with us. So safe conversation in a safe space. Until next time, we'll talk to you soon. Love you all. Be great. Be yourself. Be the one, as Brother Booker would say. Peace.